And now, the best of Pete Price. The best of Pete Price. On Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's back on television where he belongs. It's the lovely Paul O'Grady. How are you?
I'm not bad, are you?
Oh, I just love the programme. Are you excited?
I'm looking forward to getting back to work very much. And I'm but I'm cleaning at the moment. That's how excited I am. I've got the Uber out and I'm doing my washing.
What? Are you? I mean, you've gone on ITV. You've gone back at 9 o'clock. It's going to be exciting. The trails are amazing for the programme.
You know what? I keep missing them.
Oh, they're fabulous. They're very, very
funny. I remember
the
day where we were in there. It was 10 hours doing it.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen any yet. I'll have to get the telly on and have a look. I haven't had a chance, Peter, but I've been running around like a headless chicken.
When you are the busiest man ever, why are you putting a frock on again, this pantomime?
Because I did a week in Wimbledon this year, in Aladdin, and had a ball. And then Michael Rose, who I worked with on Chitty Bang Bang, he was the producer, and he's a smashing fella because he's one of these who spends a fortune, you know, on the sets and Aussies and all that. He doesn't skimp.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, do you want to do Aladdin in Southampton? Because they've got that theatre for Christmas. And I was going to be the villain, you know, the wicked uncle, because the Genie of the Lamp, you're never on. You only come on at the end.
So well, that's why you wouldn't come to Liverpool, wasn't it? Because you weren't going to cheat your audience.
Well, listen, they said to me, you know, will you come and do Genie of the Lamp? And I said, I can't. I'd be lynched because I'd be sat, you know, they get 5 minutes of me at the end of the first half and then a little bit in the second half. The Genie doesn't, he doesn't do much, for God's sake. You have to rub the lamp before he does anything. I can't do that one. But now I'm doing the course. It's all gone from Genie the Lamp to the villain. And I said, look, let's just forget it all. Why don't I just drag Lily out and do Widow Twanky?
I've heard there are very few tickets left already.
They've gone like hotcakes. Just hope I deliver the goods. I mean, it's been 6 years since. I know what they're going to say. They're going to sit there and go, Christ, she's aged. Look at
Now, what are you doing about the costumes? Are you having a complete new wardrobe?
None of the others fit me anymore.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I thought they would. And so we dragged a load of them out and I couldn't even get the zip up me back.
Oh, my word.
So I don't know what I've done because I don't think I've put weight.
You look exactly the same to me.
And me?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's because it's a new production and it's. I've never been a good guy in a panto before. I've always been the villain.
Right.
So it's all new costumes.
So where is the pantomime?
At the Mayflower Theatre in Southampton.
And it always puts big pantos on, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it's like the Empire. It's got a huge stage.
Yeah.
You know, and it's lovely. You know, it's like because you go out on a lovely big stage, it's smashing. Mm. Even though the Empire have pulled down the legs of a man, Public House. Which where Lily was born outside, which upset me.
No, it's a
It is. It's a lovely theatre.
It's a lot better now, though. Does it feel weird not working tea times on Channel 4?
No, not at all. Because as soon as I finished it, you know, Christmas was over, it just felt. I thought, well, time to, you know, turn a page now and move on.
Talking about turning a page, what a great intro that is. The book is out very shortly.
Oh, I know.
And it's part two of... Is it going to be a four-part of this book?
I think it's going to go a bit about, like, Encyclopedia Britannica by the time I've bloody finished. There'll be about 200 volumes. Because I sit down, you know, and I think, oh, all right, I'll do this. Because it's like homework writing a book. I'm not going to... You know, you have to. I have to really be disciplined and sit down and do 8 hours a day on it. And I thought, no, I'll go up to the end because you get distracted and there's all these great characters along the way and it's a shame to sort of rush them on. You know, you want to, like, develop them and deliver the goods, you know, and all the jobs I did when I was working for Camden Social Services, you know, I met the people I met there and all that and the situations I found myself in. It's a shame not to elaborate on them and to tell the whole tale.
Paul, they say when you write a book it's lonely. Is it lonely?
It's boring because you're on your own. And I can only write late at night. So, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm sat there. And I've got Bullseye, who I keep opening the back door to let him out. And he came in one night and he sat on my face, chewing away at something. I thought he had a stick. And when I looked down, it was a rat's head with its spine and a tail. Oh, God. And I thought, 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to get a rat off a dog. There's got to be another way to earn a living, surely to God. You know, it is quite lonely, yeah, because you get phone calls saying, oh, come out tonight, or we're going to so-and-so, and you can't because you're working. Because it is, it's work, you know. I class writing a book as hard work.
Where do you get the title from?
Well, my mother used to say to me, if, you know, I'd be getting all dolls up to go over to Liverpool, go clubbing it, as I lived for them days. That's all I wanted to do. And she'd say, oh, the devil rides out tonight. You come down the stairs, you know, in your bomber jacket and your loons, all the air, bright red air, 10 foot of it, reeking of Aquamanda, some other muck. And then that's what she used to say, oh, the devil rides out tonight.
And did that jump into your head straight away, or have you had a while thinking of a title?
No, because it starts with, I'm in bed with my mother, because I'm 18, and I've been to see The Exorcist, and I got home and I was that scared, I couldn't sleep in my own bed. So I jumped in with her, and of course it's chaos. You can imagine jumping in with your mum in the middle of the night when you're 18, she's screaming the place down, calling me all sorts. And it just came to mind when she used to say, oh, the devil rides out, when I was going out.
Are people going to get a shock at this particular chapter? Is this going to be this chapter of your life, is this going to be the rude bits?
Well, it depends what your class is rude. You know, there's lots of prostitutes in it, work, but I don't mean, I mean the old-fashioned working girls.
Yeah.
You know, the ones who used to have a shop over a laundrette with a red light. All right, love. And they'd be about 70. And they'd say they were 16 with a swimmer's body on the phone. Oh, yes, petite blondes. You know, and they'd be there in a ratty old corset with the old bosoms looking like two used tea bags hanging over the top, you know, on the blower. So if you consider that shocking, then yeah. And also some of the stories I had to deal with when I was waiting for social services, they're pretty rough. Mm. You know, you're looking at abused kids, battered wives, all that sort of stuff. And the times I had to run in the middle of the night because some drunken father had turned up in the wee small hours and thought I was his wife's bit of stuff. You know, his wife was in hospital. Yeah. And they'd go for me. I mean, I remember one fella threatening to set the flat on fire. And I was in the bathroom with two babies. One of them was 18 months. And I had to run through the snow with these kids wrapped in towels because they didn't have their pyjamas on, to try and find a phone box to get them to a place of safety. Wow. So stuff like that, you know, that's pretty airy.
You also have grown through different stages of gay life. You've seen the early stages when it was not accepted, and then because you've been an icon and worked within the gay community in some of the best places they've ever had, have you seen big changes?
Oh, God, yeah, loads. You know, I remember, you know, you always used to be blacked out windows, the clubs and the pubs. You remember the Bears Paw and Sadie's, of course. Sadie's in it. Couldn't write a book without Sadie. So Sadie's is in it. Because it was such a part of our life. You know, we went here 5 times a week to Sadie's.
Yeah.
And so all that. And yeah, it's all, I mean, you know, like you go down in London now, you go down Old Compton Street, what they call the gay village, and it's all high fashion, you know, these fabulous restaurants and really lovely bars. But when I started out, it was all, you know, boarded up windows and you'd have to knock 4 times on the door and say, so-and-so sent me. You know, you remember what it was like, all them, the bit of poor and what have you. It was a hoot.
I do indeed. Did you discover Lily in this book? Is this where, in this part?
Oh, yeah. All that starts, that's all. About getting an act together and about all the old drag queens who used to be on the circuit. Most of them are dead now. You know, they were all fascinating characters. You don't get them like that anymore.
No. And they all had names, didn't they? The gay world, all of them had their own character names.
Oh, God, yeah. You know, everybody had a name. Because I remember when I first went down in the gay bar and they called each of the women's names. I said, there's no way I'm ever going to behave like any of this nonsense. And lo and behold, 12 months later, I'm known as Shanghai Lil. You know what I'm saying? Because I went to a party on a Chinese ship. And they all called me Shanghai Lil. And I was known as, I was 18, you know, Shanghai Lil. I thought, Christ, my mother found this. I put it in hospital. That her son's the notorious Shanghai Lily. But it was, they were like nicknames, really. It wasn't, you know, I remember there was a fella who used to go in Sadie's and he was called Bella Roberts.
Oh, I remember Bella.
And you used to dress up as an owl woman with a British Home Stores Mac on and a carrier bag.
I remember
that. We used to sit, and he'd talk like an owl woman. How are you, lads? You're all right. And we'd sit there screaming, laughing at him. You know, all that lot. Of course, it's all there's nothing, none of that now. You know, and anybody, all the young drag acts, they all want to look like supermodels.
And of course, Sadie was one of life's big characters.
Oh, Sadie was just, you know, well, wasn't Sadie just too? I mean, trying to explain Sadie to people was a big Liverpool character, Sadie.
Isn't it sad that Sadie's not with us now? I wonder how he would have reacted to your success.
He'd probably, when he read the book, said, "Hey, I'm going to kill you." Because we used to knock on my... We'd go to the club, me and my mate, and we'd bang on the door, and he hated me mate, Alan. And he used to shout out the window, "Do you remember?" You know, as he always... We'd be going there 5 years. Yeah. "Do you remember?" "Yes, Sadie, it's me." And he'd come down and he'd take a look at me mate and he'd say, "Is that one Bevy's?" "No." "No, get in." 20 pence, you know, and you go up the stairs, like, sticking to the floor. God, did I love Sadie's. It was a fabulous club.
Can you remember your first dress as Lily?
No. No. Yeah. Not at all. In fact, I had trouble remembering the act, to tell you the truth, the first time I ever did it. It was a bit of a blur.
Right.
You know, I don't know, I just couldn't remember it. I remember vague bits, but I just couldn't put it, you know, I couldn't remember how I felt in anything.
When you did Lily, I mean, you really did become an icon, because everybody, I saw you at the old talk of the town, and I mean, there was, God, what, 3,000-4,000 people in there,
yeah.
And you ripped the place apart. Did it take you a long time to get to that character as that stage?
Well, no, because like with the Vauxhall, you know, I only lived up the road. I had a little council flat up the road that everybody knew was Lily Savage's house. Mm-hmm. So they'd all go past on the bus. You know, you'd hear them shouting, "Lily," out the window. So when I was getting up, I was talking about things that we could all relate to, you know, that had happened to us. So I was talking about things like being unemployed, the police, the council, you know, and all that. Mm. And just day-to-day troubles that most acts didn't do. You know, it was all getting up and looking fabulous. They weren't actually talking about things that were happening.
And miming to records, which I thought was pathetic.
Well, everybody... I started out as a mime act because it was fashionable.
Right.
Because to have a live act meant you have to get a drummer in and an organist or a pianist or whatever.
Yeah.
So when the mime acts came along, the pub landlords found it was far cheaper to book a mime act than a live act.
Ah, that was the logic behind it.
So that was the logic, yeah, that was it. So that was it. Live acts, when I first started, weren't fashionable.
Right.
You know, if you said you were a live act, we like the mime. And also, it was a nice way to sort of ease yourself into it. Mm.
Did you ever get stage fright, Paul?
Oh, terrible.
Really?
No, God, yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah. When I first started, yeah, I was always... I used to worry as soon as I woke up. You know, if I was working that night, I'd think, oh, God, I'm working tonight.
And did the nerves last until you were on and then it went?
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. I'd be going on the train, say, to, I don't know, Sheffield.
Yeah.
You know, I could never sit and read a book and relax.
Right.
I was always sort of sitting there thinking, going through my head what I was going to say and all that. And I was always relieved when it was over, put it that way. I always thought it was like a boxing match, you see. And it was either me won or the audience won.
Interesting analogy.
You know, it was like a challenge.
Yeah.
So I always thought that every night was like a challenge. Not good for you.
Well, no, it isn't really good for you. Do you get nervous on telly?
No.
Isn't that weird? Why?
Yeah. I used to. I don't anymore.
Yeah.
But I think it's for doing it for so long now.
Right.
You know, I get apprehensive, but I don't get nervous. I don't get all that dissity. I can't go on all that malarkey because I'd pack up if I got... Because there's lots of people who are like that, who throw up and stuff before they go on.
Do you know what we love about you? My listeners always say this, and everybody I ever speak to, what we love is you never lose that excitement. When you meet somebody you've wanted to meet, you are not cool at all. You are you.
No, I'm not.
But that's great. That's great.
Well, you know, I'm a punter. You know, when I watch the soaps, because I love the soaps, and then I'll bump into somebody from Emmerdale. I'm in awe. I go, oh, God, it's so-and-so from Emmerdale. It's Diane.
No, but that's great. I mean, you gave me some of the most incredible laughs on your show and also some great memories. And I'll never, ever forget you for being invited onto your show with Lauren Bacall. I couldn't believe I was on with a Hollywood legend.
Well, this is it. You know, you sat with Humphrey Bogart's widow.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be blasé. You know, you think, this is the woman who said, you know how to whistle, don't you? You know what I mean? In the big sleep.
Do you remember?
And you just... you think, God, this is Lauren Bacall. How can you be blasé and sit there and say, so, Miss Bacall, tell me. I'm not like that. I can't do it. I mean, when I met Barbara Streisand, that's why I have gas in here. I was beside myself because I've been such a fan of hers for years. And Cagney and Lacey.
Yeah.
And all the Avenger girls. You know, and you get to meet these. I mean, when I met John Steve, Patrick McNee, God, you couldn't touch me for weeks. I was in a state of grace after that.
But you've never changed, and that's a good thing, surely.
Well, you see, what happens is you don't... Well, I don't think I've changed. Other people change around you.
Yes.
That's the thing. I think I've stayed the same. You know, my circumstances are different.
Yeah.
But I think I've stayed... It's just other people change towards you, really.
Paul, what do you want people to take from the new book?
Just have a laugh. Really, you know, it's not... Whatever they... I mean, everybody, when you read a book, you have your own opinion, don't you? And there's always something in it that you recognise from your own life that you can relate to. So hopefully people will find things in this they can relate to.
And what,
there'd have to be an ex-prostitute who turned into a drag queen. People were... Because I had loads of really crappy jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, awful jobs. And they're all in it, you know. So people relate to that. You know, and just getting your rent together for the end of the week.
What age does this go up to, Paul?
This goes up to 1980, New Year's Eve, 1980.
Right. And is anybody going to be upset by this book?
I shouldn't think so, no. You never know. You know, yet to meet anyone who's written an autobiography who hasn't had trouble, you know, hasn't upset someone. Because the other thing is, it's what you saw, not what they saw. You know, there's always three sides to a conversation or a situation. And you write from your personal point of view, not anybody else's. So they might have seen it differently.
The incredible thing about this book is the advanced sales are absolutely ridiculous on the strength of your last one.
Well, you think I'd be cock-a-hoop, wouldn't you? But I'm not.
You should be.
It makes me very nervous. I think, oh, God.
But your last one was a huge success. Everyone loved it. I mean, it was belly laughs. It wasn't laughter. It was belly laughs.
But I was just writing about real life, you know. Mm. There was no gags in there, really. I was writing about my auntie putting the makeup on and my mother having the odd row with the shop assistant and what have you. And it was just real life. And recognition, you know, talking about the Plovy check. How we all survived on the Provident check and Christmas clubs and all that malarkey that's long gone.
Will you have any time or is there any plans to do any book signings?
I think I am, yeah. You see, because of the show now, it's all come at once as usual.
Yeah.
You know, the books come out at the same time as the show.
Yeah.
And then I finish the telly and I go straight in. I literally finish on the Friday, start the rehearsals on the Saturday morning.
Wow. How's your health?
All right, smashing. As long as I get my kip, I'm fine. I find if I don't have, you know, if I go without sleep, you can't look at me. But as long as I get my kip, I'm okay. I can handle it.
And I mentioned in my column in The Echo a while ago that you really never got over Buster, did you? And you couldn't believe the outpouring of grief in the country for your little doggy.
Jesus, honestly. I remember the morning he died and it was in the papers. I came out to the flat in London and this builder come up to me. And he said, oh, mate, I'm really sorry about your dog. And he started to cry.
No.
And I said, he said, all the lads are really upset. And there are all these scaffolders and they're all looking down at me, you know, all mournful.
Yeah.
Good God. But yeah, I got letters from all over the world, emails, you name it. Mm. People working on Broadway were ringing up saying, oh, we've turned all the lights off in the dressing rooms for a minute as a tribute. Because they'd worked with him.
Yeah. Well, it was just a lovely dog. It was just a lovely dog, and it was part of you.
He'd been on the stage since he was 6 weeks old.
Wow.
He was used to it, and he loved it. That was the other thing. He hated the countryside, hated it. And he hated being stuck in it. He liked to be out. You know, Buster's idea of a good time was to go on tour. That was it. He loved it. You know, if he was in a theatre, he was in his element. Trains, planes, helicopters, you name it, that dog loved it. What he hated was leading the life of a normal dog. He couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
He used to get depressed.
Paul, are we going to get some surprises on the telly? Have you got the same team with you?
Well, this is it. You see, people have said, well, what's it like working for ITV? I said, well, it's the same studio, the same crew, the same team.
Wow.
So it's all the same.
So it's going home.
Well, exactly. It doesn't fit. And my old boss from Channel 4, Kevin Ligo, he's now gone over to ITV. So working for the same person.
Oh, that's lovely, that, because your comfort zone is all around you.
Well, that's it. Feels no difference. You know, it's not like I'm over in Shepherd's Bush with the BBC, which is totally different. It's a completely different ball game when you're filming in there. So you know, and it's lovely to see all the crew again. They're also glad you're back.
I think it's great that you've got the same team, because it really is good.
Yeah.
And is it going to be a people show?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's
like
really
exciting. Tom, you know, there's a girl in Wales who's crazy for him, and it's a lifelong dream to meet him. She's coming on.
Yeah.
You know, just bring that on poor old Tom. They are Tom.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, no, I like having members of the public on. Yeah. But every week there'll be a member of the public on.
But you're a people person, aren't you?
Well, I'm one of them, you know what I mean? This is it. You see, I don't lead a show busy life. You know
no.
what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here, just before you rang, I'm on my hands and knees trying to get Chewy off the floor.
Chewy in your house?
There's no way somebody's walked Chewy in. You know, when you get them big black spots, you get like when you get in the pub floor, and you think, what's this? And it's Chewy. Because I don't have a cleaner up here. I can't bear it. I do it myself.
How many animals have you got now?
I've got me pig, two goats, about 9 sheep, an owl, all the chickens and 3 dogs. So I've cut down, really. Because normally I've got more than that.
Paul O'Grady, you've got a new TV show. You've got a new book. You've got a new pantomime. It really is. You've got it. You're going to be. You know, you're going to be saying 6 months. I'm absolutely.
No, I'll tell you. No, you know what the famous last words are with me?
Go on.
Never again. Never again.
Yeah.
I sit there saying, that's it. No, never again. And I'm up doing it the week after. I should never say.
Every time I have a phone call with you, you always make me laugh. But the best one for me was you in 6 foot of snow, trying to feed the sheep, saying, because you hated pantomime, bring back the dwarves any day.
Oh, God, yeah. I said, any day. Put me in 2 a day with 7 dwarves rather than this waist deep in snow. With lambs, newborn lambs that I had to bottle feed. And because we had no lecky, all the lecky went. I had to go and move into the shed in the garden because it's got a wood burning stove. So there's me. 2 dogs and a pair of twin lambs on bottle feeding every 5 hours. I thought, no. I felt, do you remember that programme about that woman in Yorkshire, Hannah Coxwell?
Yeah.
And she was out dragging hay, and we all felt, I felt like her. I thought, I've turned into that.
Paul O'Grady, I've taken an awful lot of your time. Thank you so much. What's the book called again?
It's called The Devil Rides Out.
Fantastic. Paul O'Grady, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Pete.
The best of Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.